And thank goodness Judge Stephen Martin is a very patient man, putting up with me this morning, taking more time than I told him I would. We've been talking about Orville's. Don't look at you. That's not a cue for you to look at your watch.
Come on.
We're talking about Orville's Revenge, The Anatomy of a Suicide. Do you have another interview you have to get to or something?
No, you have something better to do this morning? I got to get back home to do the crossword puzzle. Yeah.
All right. And maybe your wife wants you to do a little shoveling.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe if I keep you here long enough, Nancy will do the shoveling for you.
I hope so.
We're going to get to my friend Frank Bryan here in a moment and what role he has played in this whole Orville Gibson story here. But first, we go to the phone. And Howard Coffin is joining us. Good morning, Howard. How are you?
I'm well, and how are you?
Not too bad.
And congratulations to Judge Martin. I've talked to him about this book, and it's quite an achievement.
Well, thank you.
Listen, as you know, we chatted a while ago. I knew a lot of the principals in this case, including Henry Black.
Yep.
Who always described himself as a poor country lawyer, but he was wily as can be. Well, I used to go to Dartmouth football games with him once in a while, and one afternoon, sitting in the sunshine, I decided to ask him about the Gibson case. I'd had a fascination for it since my father happened to know a couple of the principals in it. And I said, tell me, what really happened up there? And Henry thought a minute, and he said, well, you know what happened is, he hadn't been good to his hired man, and they took him out for a ride, and they got him out on the bumpy roads, and apparently he hit his head, and they found that he was dead when they got through giving him that ride, and so they dumped him in the river.
Oh,
now, that
man.
Sure doesn't go along with what you say in your book, but what are your thoughts on that?
Wow, another theory here. Huh. Any blood in the car from the evidence of that, Howard, that you know of?
I don't remember a detail like that. This was years and years ago. Henry's been dead for years, of course.
Okay.
Well, I got an explanation.
Yeah.
Henry didn't know about Ford and Spellman.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Dick found out about those two guys. Because if you check the newspapers and... people have written about this case. No one knew about Ford and what did I say? Spellman? Not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know about them, and I don't think Henry knew that the police officers had gone down to Philadelphia to talk with Spellman, and that the police officers, along with Woodruff, had gone to see Ford in Boston. And I don't know how Dick found out about that. My theory is that Dick used to be the state's attorney for Washington County back when Spellman was the medical examiner, and that they had a friendship. And I suspect that Spellman, when he found out that these men were being charged with the murder of Gibson, he called up Dick and says, I think that Woodruff's explanation is wrong, and I'm willing to come up and testify to straighten that out. To me, it's a clear case of suicide. And I don't think Henry Black knew that. Of course, Henry played his cards close to his vest. He knew the case was weak, and... I think he did the right thing for Ozzie, and it turned out well. Except for poor Ozzie, the strain of that case enhanced his cancer, I think, and he was dead within a few months afterwards.
Well, thank you, and congratulations.
Okay.
Let's go to Burlington. Frank, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
It's funny to hear Frank Bryan talking, because Frank and I have discussed this case quite often, and I was about 7 years old when it happened, but I knew the Carpenter family through Herm Carpenter, who lived in Essex Junction, where I was from, and he had some money, and that we had always heard the story that he financed the defense, and I just wonder if there's any truth to that.
Who financed the defense?
Frank's brother did.
Frank's brother.
Frank's brother, Herm Carpenter.
Herm, yep, he did. Herm had a very successful plumbing business there in Essex Junction.
Sprinkler business, yeah. Had a fire, yeah.
And, yes, he was convinced that his brother was not involved, and yeah, that's why he hired Dick to defend him. And he paid the bills.
That's the story we had heard. I just wondered if it was true.
It certainly was.
Well, Herm was quite a guy. He was a philanthropist, that and he donated a lot of money to a lot of things in Essex that people never realized.
But. Yeah, he was a wonderful guy. The thing I liked about him is that when the experts came, when Spellman came and Ford came, right after the trial on the steps of the courthouse, Herm asked each one, well, how much do I owe you? And they would say, oh, $300 and $500, and he doubled it.
Wow.
He was...
Well, I'm glad to know the story's true. That's the way I grew up always thinking that, and knowing Herm, and he always treated our family really well. We didn't have any money things for our family. But anyway, great.
Yep.
Thanks for your call. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Do you have any ballpark recollection what that case would have cost to defend?
Oh. A
couple of grand?
Oh, it's around $3,500.
Wow. Which would get you, you know, maybe a couple hours with you these days.
Yeah. He didn't charge for any of the work I did.
All right, let's... before we talk about Frank Bryan, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in your research on newspaper stories about this case and unsolved murder stories. And I guess maybe I should be thankful. Ooh. So how'd you miss the story that I wrote for the Free Press about unsolved murders and use this as the poster child?
Well, I don't know. Did you include this case?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gosh, I don't know how I missed it. What date was that? Maybe on my second edition I'll mention it.
I can't recall.
Oh.
I cannot recall.
Oh.
All right, let's talk about Frank Bryan here. Frank Bryan, longtime University of Vermont professor who grew up in Newbury and has this to say about Newbury. I wrote this for Vermont Magazine. Newbury, like all real places, has had some shame, too. Perhaps the worst event in the village's history, at least in the 20th century, was the abduction and murder of farmer Orville Gibson in 1957. The Gibson killing has become probably the state's most infamous unsolved murder case. Newbury became the subject of many national stories on the case, including one in Life magazine. Frank obviously missed my story, too, there, Steve.
Yeah.
A novel, The Lynching of Orrin Newfield, was published based on the case. Press reports were fed by the mythologies of small-town life, and Newbury became the beautiful little village where white church steeples among the elms hide dark and sinister forces of evil. Most of that was baloney, but we did kill Orville Gibson. So what role has Frank played in this story?
Well, of course, he comes from Newbury, and he is a graduate of Newbury High School, I think, in 1959. And he was interviewed in connection with this case, along with his mother. They were part of the investigation. And then when he was a senior in college up at St. Michael's,
add a little fuel to the fire, shall we say?
Yeah, he decided to run a little stunt. Well, I'll read from my book. Bryan did not reveal his own contribution to the folklore of this case. On September 25, 1960, a dummy was found hanging on the Newbury-Haverhill Bridge. Lieutenant Andrew Monty of the Vermont State Police described the scene as follows. On the fourth horizontal steel beam from the New Hampshire end of the bridge, at approximately 4 feet from the right side, there was found suspended a dummy clothed in raincoat, boots, and cap. The dummy was hanging by a rope with an amateurish replica of a hangman's noose or knot fashioned just above the head of the dummy. The rope was looped twice around the lower portion of the inverted K-beam and once around the upper beam and then knotted. A picture of this dummy is in my book. The dummy was clad in an old-style army-type raincoat, a plain red ski or hunting-type cap, and tan rubber boots of medium height. The head was found to be made of coarse pine shavings placed in a portion of a gray knit sweater. The trunk of the body or dummy was composed of a Western-style red plaid shirt, which had been sewn together with a sewing machine so that it would hold the shavings with which it was filled. On Wednesday morning, 2 days later, information was received at Montpelier headquarters that one Frank Bryan, 19, of Newbury, had gone to the office of the Burlington Free Press in Burlington, Vermont, and admitted making and placing the dummy on the bridge. Disingenuously, Bryan told the police that when the dummy was made up, there was no thought given to the Gibson case, and that the repercussions or consequences of his act as associated with that particular case did not enter his mind. To this day, he maintains that point of view.
Really? Really? Because you saw him somewhat recently.
Yes. Yeah. He attended one of my book signings over in Wells River.
So he just kind of ran, says he randomly just put up a dummy there on the bridge.
That's
just
right.
Just for fun. Yeah. Okay. Do you think you've convinced people in the last hour or so here that this case was really a suicide? Do you think people are going to believe this even with the evidence you've provided?
People who are not familiar with the case initially, almost all of the people that I've talked to who have read this book are convinced it's suicide. Many of the people who think they are very familiar with the case, from like the police officer who called who said he thought certain facts were true, which I indicated were not, I probably have not convinced them that. I take the view that Dick won this case in the court of law. I'm trying to win this case in the court of public opinion. I don't know whether I will achieve that goal.
It's two totally different things, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
One of the things that you talk about in connection with this book is this whole idea of the importance of keeping an open mind, which
yes.
probably applies to more than just this case. It might apply to things more generally. Can you say what you mean by that?
Well, many of the things that all of us think are true, we think they're true based on conventional wisdom. We don't necessarily believe they're true on the basis of real fact. I'll give you an example. Did Jesus really walk on water? Were there really weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? You can point to a lot of things. Did George Washington really cut down a cherry tree? Can go on and on things that we accept on conventional wisdom rather than on what's really the truth.
I didn't know who coined that term before I read your book.
Oh, well, John Galbraith coined it back in 1958 when he wrote his book of the Influence Society.
What was he referring to?
Well, he was he was referring to many events of the day and talking about society and wealth and how it's applied and how it's used.
Let's take a call from Newbury. Doris, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I've been listening to this, and I can't keep quiet any longer.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
She can't keep quiet any longer.
Oh, can't keep quiet. Oh, okay.
So many things are untrue in this book. The judge seems to like to spend a lot of time saying how badly Orville beat up his hired man. And I don't know if you've got a lot of proof of that. You've got opinions from either side, and of course, Gibson is no longer around to contradict that.
Oh, so, all I have is the report of the police who investigated as you call it, the alleged beating.
Well, they couldn't talk to Gibson, could they?
Oh, yes. The interview
Trooper Washburn.
Of Trooper Washburn interviewed both Eli Martin and Orville Gibson within hours after the alleged beating.
Okay, it's still an alleged beating.
Well, not according to the trooper.
You also said that Gibson never took his wife anywhere. That's baloney. You're not giving the police any credit for not being able to find clues of the silage. You're giving Freeman Placey a lot of credit, but you're not giving the police any credit in being able to find anything.
Well, I guess I don't understand what you...
One of the reasons Lil Knight was so emphatic that it was suicide was because she was scared to death her son might be involved. And you're also ignoring the deathbed confession that's been pointed out to you. Why would somebody confess something to being involved if they weren't, if none of this happened, if it was suicide? Why would somebody confess?
I can't... Well, of course, Dad is suggesting that only one person was involved.
No. More than one, but probably not as many as a dozen that you mentioned.
If it was a vigilante killing, yeah, it would have, according to Huey, 7 to 12 people were involved. But there's no evidence to support that.
There's a lot of speculation, but there's a lot of people in Newberry that you are never going to convince that this is suicide.
Oh, I realize that.
And you're one of them.
I am definitely one of them.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Doris, thank you for calling. I appreciate
it.
Thank you. Bye. Anything in what she said there you want to challenge? That she said? You talk to enough people in town?
Well, there's no evidence. It is clear from the police officer's statement, and I was leafing through my book here to find the statement that the police officer took.
From Washburn? I got it right here. This one.
Yeah.
When do you read that?
All right, this is what Trooper Washburn said. Within hours after the incident occurred, Mr. Gibson showed the scene to the investigator and stated that he went out to the milk house to find Martin as he had been gone about 20 minutes. He found Martin in the barnyard stumbling around where he evidently landed when he tipped over the wheelbarrow. He said he helped Martin get up and then went back into the stable, and Martin came in and then advised Martin that he would have to ask him to pay for the milk he had spilled. According to Mr. Gibson, Martin then took off his cap and threw it on the floor and jumped on it and told Mr. Gibson that he hated his guts and then made motions toward Gibson that indicated he was going to strike him. Now, that's Gibson's explanation of the incident. Now, you read what Mr. Martin said. Mr. Martin stated that he was wheeling two cans of milk from the stable to the milk house, and the wheelbarrow overturned and spilled most of the milk. He went back into the stable and told Mr. Gibson what had happened, and Mr. Martin stated that Mr. Gibson immediately struck him, knocked him to the floor, and swore and kicked and beat at him in a blind rage. Mr. Gibson then ordered him from the property and followed him out the south entrance of the barn and kept kicking him until he got nearly out to the highway. These kicks were evidently aimed to hasten his departure from the barn. Now, there are the two stories. What happened when the Trooper Washburn presented his affidavits to the state's attorney, Bud Ottoman issued an arrest warrant for for Gibson to be charged for the beating of Eri Martin. Otherwise, the police officer obviously interviewed both within hours of the incident and decided that Eri Martin was telling the true story.
Let's take a call from Moncton Ridge. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. My dad, Earl Greer, was born and brought up in Newberry, Vermont. And during the time that Orville was missing, he had friends in the state police, excuse me, and they asked him to come over and help with the investigation over there because my father had grown up, one of the Gibson farms, I believe, my grandfather had owned that before.
Yeah.
And my father had played around that area as a boy and grown up around there, and they wanted to know if there was any caves or places where somebody could put a body or if somebody could, you know, if there was any places where boys used to play where somebody could stick something away. And my father went over for a couple of days and helped them, and they couldn't find anything out. But my dad always told me that the people from town did it, and I think he's dead now. Frank, I can't think of his last name. Carpenter?
Frank Carpenter's passed away,
Carpenter,
yes.
Carpenter was involved.
Yep.
And a group from town had beaten Orville up and got a little too crazy with it and tied him up and thrown him in the river after. So that's what I take from it. And I find it hard to, how can a fella tie himself up like that and then roll himself off a bridge? Would that be the first time in history that I've ever heard of a person committing suicide with chains, drowning themselves in a river?
Well, it wasn't chains.
Yeah.
Rope or whatever, not
rope,
chains, but
yeah.
Rope. I mean, would that be the first time? I never heard this.
No. I can read from my book what Spellman's opinion was.
All right, I'm going to slip in an ad while you do that. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our friends at Jet Service Envelope. 229-9335 is their phone number if you want to get brochures done. You could even get your own book published there. You could add your book published there, Steve.
Yes.
229-9335. Also, if you'd gone to the web at jetservice-envelope.com, you would have known they could have published your book even before I told you that. And on your next book, when you include my piece that I wrote for the Free Press and you excoriate me like you did everybody else, you can go to Jet Service Envelope and do that. So can the rest of you folks at 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back after this.
TheCountryBookshop.com. TheCountryBookshop.com. TheCountryBookshop. TheCountryBookshop. TheCountryBookshop.com. You know, we are in Plainfield, Vermont. We are in Plainfield, Vermont. The Country Bookshop. We are in Plainfield. TheCountryBookshop.com. You know, we're buying and selling old books, buying and selling used books, the paper and the postcards. We are in Plainfield, the Country Bookshop.com. Oh, yes, it's 454-8439. 454-8439. Every day we're open 10 till 5. The Country Bookshop.com. Get happy, browse, and read. Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountain tops.
People are driving from West Lebanon, Burlington, St. Jay, even Hardwick and White River Junction. Jack Castellaneta, we're seeing Formula Nissans all over Vermont and New Hampshire.
That's because when you pay less for a new Nissan, it's worth the drive from anywhere to Formula Nissan in Barrie. And right now, during the holiday sales event, we've made it simpler than ever to drive a new Nissan, and simpler means cheaper.
Huge factory discounts, holiday bonus cash up to $4,500, or choose 0% financing for up to 72 2 months. Jack, with these year-end closeout deals, it really is the best time to drive a new Nissan.
Forget the sticker price, forget dealer markups, get the best Nissan price, plain and simple. That's why Formula Nissan is consistently ranked among the top Nissan dealers in Vermont.
Only at Formula Nissan, on the Barry Montpelier Road, next to Pizza Hut, and at FormulaNissan.com.
Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
Financing and approved credit, bonus cash on select vehicles. See dealer for details.
This portion of the Mark Johnson Show is being presented by Ormsby's Computer Systems. They specialize in small business support services and specialize in networking and security. Moving soon to their new location on the Barry Montpelier Road, just past Walker Imports, Ormsby Computer Systems, your total solution providers since 1982.
All smiles, all smiles, all smiles, family dental, all smiles, all smiles.
It's official. All Smiles Family Dental Center is Central Vermont's Invisalign preferred provider. To celebrate, we're offering Invisalign for the same price as traditional braces. Affordable financing programs are available. There is no reason not to get the fantastic smile you deserve with comfortable, clear, virtually invisible Invisalign aligners. Now for the same price as braces. Call 476-8700. That's 476-8700 to arrange a free initial consultation. Or visit myvtsmiles.com. All Smiles on the Barry Montpelier Road. Are you all smiles?
All smiles, all smiles. Family dental. All smiles, all smiles.
It's no secret, Mihuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mihuron. For over 7 decades, Mihuron's has been catering to the needs of the Mad River Valley and beyond. We have custom-cut meats, fresh produce and seafood, regular and organic grocery, locally produced foods galore, topped off by an extraordinary wine and beer department and a state liquor agency. Shop Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center, Waitsfield.
Congratulations to Patty Smith of Wells River. She's the winner of a $300 gift certificate from Johnson Woolen Mills in Radio Vermont's Biggest Buck Contest. Patty correctly guessed the weight of the biggest deer taken during Vermont's rifle season at 247 pounds. Vermont's Fish and Wildlife Department says this trophy deer was the 6-pointer reported in Eden. Thanks to all who entered, and congratulations again to Patty Smith, Wells River, the winner of Radio Vermont's Biggest Buck Contest.
Right back, continue our discussion. We've been talking with Judge Stephen Martin about his book about the Orville Gibson case. I'm not sure we've convinced many of you out there on this one, but I know the judge will give it his best effort here. By the way, so Judge, have you bought Nancy any gifts for Christmas this year? One or two. All right, well, you need 3 or 4, so I would recommend that you and everybody else listening head on up and see our friends at Morse Farm Maple Sugar Works. They're right there in beautiful East Montpelier. You could pick up your lovely bride there a nice little gift pack of items, maybe a little maple candy, maybe a little of that maple kettle corn that you could then steal from her. Maybe you're having an office party coming up. You know, that maple kettle corn is really great for those events. And you can shop at Morse Farm a couple of different ways. They have a fantastic website, morsefarm.com. Though it would be really great if you could head on up there and place your orders on a day like today. They have a great cross-country facility up there that you could be taking advantage of. 2.7 miles up the county road there from the roundabout there in downtown Montpelier, 200 years of family tradition. Who knew that Burr Morse was that old? Stop in and see them. You can also call them at 223-2740, 223-2740. And again, you can shop with them online at morsefarm.com. In fact, Burr Morse got a mention in your book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I gave him a description that Burr Morse would give to Gibson, and he was not a fellow who was of a friendly sort and who was gregarious. He was pretty close-lipped.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A taciturn Vermonter.
Did you find what you were looking for here?
Well, okay. I can talk about Dr. Spellman's reason why he thought Gibson committed suicide, and I'm quoting from the trial, from the Carpenter trial. After reviewing Dr. Woodruff's autopsy report, the photographs of Gibson's body and a photograph of the Newbury Haverhill Bridge, Davis asked Dr. Spillman whether Gibson could have tied himself as shown in the photographs, and here was his answer. In my opinion, this is entirely possible to have been tied by the decedent himself, Mr. Gibson. Question, will you explain that for us? Answer, in my experience with literally thousands of suicides, we have, for example, 200 a year in Philadelphia. I saw many in Vermont. Vermont is a... As a matter of fact, has one of the highest suicide rates in the country. The finding of ropes and knots and various tying procedures is not at all uncommon, and these are often in a very unusual or unlikely or seemingly inexplicable manner. He went on to say later that that he, in his experience, he had around five suicides a year he would see were tied up similar to the way Gibson was tied up.
Wow.
And if you counted those in bathtubs, it would climb up to 10.
Wow. I've never heard of that one before.
Now, Dr. Ford's opinion, reading from the transcript, Doctor, from your examination of the photographs and the rope, will you tell us whether or not you have an opinion as to whether or not the person in the photograph could have tied himself in the fashion shown in the photographs? Answer, I do. What is your opinion? Answer, that he most certainly could have.
Mm.
Now, both of these men were, and they were not witnesses necessarily called by Dick. Dick actually called him. But both of these men were consulted early on in this case by the state police. And for reasons which I can't explain, they were not only were discarded, but they were kept undercover. Dick had to find these witnesses on his own.
Mm-hmm. So they weren't like experts hired by the defense that usually, as you know from your experience, tend to come to the conclusion that the defense would like.
That's right. That's the point I make.
One other person in particular has really helped to perpetuate what Steve would call here the myth. We're going to get to this song that was done by Banjo Dan. We'll do that in a moment. First, let me remind you that a great place for you to go for lunch today is where I had lunch yesterday, and that's at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex. Have you taken your wife out to lunch lately, Steve?
Oh, have I? Many, many, many times.
Okay. Well, next time you should bring her to Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. It's right.
I've been there. Been there with her.
Okay. You remember what you had when you were down there?
No.
Soup, sandwich.
But it was great. It was wonderful.
Did you have a whoopie pie afterward, by any
chance? Yes, I've had a whoopie pie. Yes, I have had a whoopie pie.
Okay, we have this recorded, so now the whoopie pies have been endorsed by Judge Stephen Martin. I had one yesterday. They are back, and they are really fantastic. You do have to have lunch before you get to the whoopie pie. That's sort of getting ahead of yourself. So have one of their fabulous soups, one of their great sandwiches. You could also pick up some items for dinner tonight. Maybe pick up a nice bottle of wine, maybe some nice Vermont beer as well, too. It's a great place to go for Vermont products. That's Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9, and that would be in Middlesex. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hear the song that has helped perpetuate this story, and we'll be back right after this.
802cars.com represents the top three selling brands in Vermont, just off exit 7 of I-89. 802 Toyota sells Vermont's number one brand. Twin City Subaru sells Vermont's unofficial state car. 802 Honda sells Vermont's number three brand. This is Dave Birmingham, chief cook and dog walker. When you come to any of our dealerships, you'll be able to find the vehicle you want at the price you want. 802cars.com offers what no other dealer can. One-stop shopping for Vermont's top three brands, all just off the interstate. We'll help you find the right vehicle that fits your budget. Don't forget, we're the largest seller of certified used cars in Vermont because we all know the best new cars make the best used cars too. So click on 802cars.com for information on all our great products. Call 229-9117 and speak to one of our low-key product specialists. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're just a minute off the interstate. 802 Toyota, Twin City Subaru, and 802 Honda. Driving to be Vermont's number one auto solution.
Thinking about doing some projects on your home? A home improvement loan from Granite Hills Credit Union is the answer. It's quick and easy. borrow up to $10,000 with this personal loan at a great fixed low rate. No appraisal or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org to find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
Health Connect reminds you that open enrollment has started and it continues until February 15th. What does that mean to you? Good question. If you're happy with your current plan through Vermont Health Connect and don't have any changes to report, you don't need to contact them to stay covered. If you'd like to enroll in a health plan through Vermont Health Connect, now's the time. If you want your plan to start in January, you'll need to apply by December 15th at the very latest. Open enrollment is a good time to assess your own health insurance. There's no better or easier way to keep you and your family healthy than getting covered. Health insurance protects your wallet and provides some much-needed peace of mind. Have questions? Talk to someone like Sandy Singer in Central Vermont or Allie Green in Chittenden County. Both are navigators who have helped hundreds of Vermonters. To find out how Sandy and Allie or someone like them can help you, go online to VermontHealthConnect.gov or call 855-899-9600 toll-free. Visit Vermont Health Connect online, by phone, or get help from a navigator to learn more.
Imagine your car's engine running without good maintenance. Now think of your heart. The Medicine Shop Pharmacy helps you take care of life's engine. With our 100% focus on health, we're your one-stop shop for health products, as well as the health information and advice you and your family depend on. It's all part of the Medicine Shop promise to provide the products, information, and personal service that you need to care for your health and your family's health with confidence. No wonder so many health-conscious people take the Medicine Shop Pharmacy to heart. The Medicine Shop Pharmacy, 100% pure pharmacy, South Main Street, Barrie.
Looking for a cost-effective way to get your message and image before the public? Then call Always On Time Signs and Designs. They make attractive, well-designed signage in a variety of forms. They offer an in-house design service that is limited only by your imagination. Let's hear from one of their customers.
Hi, I'm Kelly Sullivan. I'm the owner of Splash Naturals, co-owner of Athena's Boutique, and I co-own Ella Boutique in Burlington. They were really easy to work with. They did design it with us. We went and stood over their shoulder and said, well, we want this. No, no, a little more bubbly. And they just kept working with us until we had exactly what we wanted. They were always on time. They were great. I felt like they had very fair prices, and that mattered as well. And they did a great job.
Call Always On Time Signs and Designs at 223-8948 or 1-800-547-0808 for a free client consultation. Located at 115 Industrial Lane in Berlin, Always On Time Signs and Designs, 223-8948 or 1-800-547-0808.
All right, we're back. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry Rick. Good morning. You're on the air with Judge Stephen Martin.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Good morning.
Steve knows me. I'm the videographer that videotaped his presentation at the Aldridge Public Library during the initial book signing tour.
Yes, Rick. You're the one who designed the cover.
This is true also. So did the cover for you. I can't believe it's been about 4 or 5 years now that we first started this whole project with going over to the Middlesex State Archivist's office and doing the scanning of the photos and all of that we did. But I was just calling to respond to the caller who said it wasn't easy to tie oneself up and roll off the bridge. For the video that you can actually see on the website, VermontInPerson.com, and Vermont is spelled out, there is the presentation that you did with Rick Davis, the son of Dick Davis, who showed exactly how easy it is to tie oneself up and indeed roll right off. So I just thought that might be of interest to somebody to see that.
So you're buying this theory?
You know, it's a very compelling case. I'm not of the age where I was here to know of the initial stuff in the early 60s. So I'm not, again, I guess I have the open mind that Steve was talking about. So, yeah, it seems like a very plausible, especially seen how easy it was to indeed tie oneself up and roll right off. So it is something that could easily have been achieved.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Rick.
Thanks for your call, Rick.
So, yeah, so if you want to see what that
thanks for the lukewarm endorsement.
Yeah. No, I think so.
Well, you spent like 9,000 hours with this guy, and you still couldn't convince him. You're on the bridge with him, and you still can't.
No. It's interesting that there is so many folks there that from that Newberry area that are, again, I guess, as Steve has said, go with the conventional wisdom of the time and go with what was felt about what the situation was. So, yeah, it's sometimes hard to overcome the conventional wisdom.
Mm. Kind of want to chuck him off a bridge, don't you?
So if you go to, it's either on Facebook at VermontInPerson.com or you can go to the website and you can see the video presentation of Steve Martin's presentation at the Aldridge Public Library that I did a little while back. So, and that shows Dick Davis. I guess he portrayed Dr. Ford. Was that who he was pretending to be?
Yes.
From the trial, right?
Yep.
So that gives you that idea. Good.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate your call.
You bet.
Let's head over to Stowe. Jim, good morning.
Hello, Steve. I've been listening to your entire talk of Orville's Revenge, and it's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Being a fellow attorney, I have some doubts about the fellow tying himself up, etc., but it's fascinating. I think it could almost be made into a picture.
You mean a movie?
Yeah.
Well, I hope maybe that will occur.
Yeah. But
maybe.
Now tell me, about how many months did you work with Dick Davis on the case?
Well, I entered his office in the fall of 1959, September, and Ozzie Welch was tried in October, and I sat in at that trial, and I interviewed many witnesses. He sent me out on the countryside to look people up. And I was fortunate enough to sit with him at the counsel table during the trial.
How old was Orville at the time?
Orville was 47.
Okay. Relatively young.
Yes.
And, well...
His hired man was 59.
You mentioned Bud Ottman, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. He was the state's attorney for Orange County at the time of the...
Incident,
yes.
Well, anyway, I think it's terrific. I like the way you spoke and the way Mark Johnson talked to you about it. And that's a fascinating thing to be able to hear, especially knowing you and Dick Davis and some of the other people that were mentioned. Anyway, I wish you all a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye.
Before I forget, Steve, are you, we heard this, there's a presentation at the Aldridge Library. Where are you going to be anywhere else talking about your book coming up?
I will go whenever I'm called. I don't have as of today, another scheduled event, though I expect one before the Bar Association come March.
Okay. Boy, that's a tough crowd.
Yes.
Let me just take a moment of your time before we wrap up this morning and remind you about our good friends at the Vermont Coffee Company. It is coffee roasted for friends. I usually have coffee that I give my guests when they come in, but I don't have any with me, so unfortunately I owe you one. Vermont Coffee Company coffee is a great blend. The dark roast is the one that I prefer. You might like the nice mild roast, and also there is a terrific decaffeinated blend, too, with very robust flavor. If you want to send it to your friends and relatives, particularly those that are out of town, one really easy way to do it is to go to their website at VermontCoffeeCompany.com. That's Vermont, spell it out, CoffeeCompany.com, and you can easily place your order there. If you're shopping here locally, you can find it at many of the Shaws and Hannafords. It's always at the independent grocery stores that we encourage you to go to, and all the major co-ops carry it as well, too. Vermont Coffee Company Coffee. It is coffee roasted for friends. So I think what we want to do here is we're going to take our audience out of the program this morning here with Banjo Dan Lindner, who wrote about the Orville Gibson case. And let's do that. And I'm going to thank you for coming in, and I'll say my farewell to you now and wish you a Merry Christmas as well. And we'll just take our audience out here with a little bit of music this morning. But it was really fun having you come in. It was really great to see you as well.
Well, thank you. It's been fun being here. I've enjoyed this.
Do you think you've convinced me? What do you think?
I don't know.
Well, on the edge, maybe?
A little on the edge. You know, a little closer.
Try to have an open mind. I just don't want to have to be the one that, in the movie, has to reenact this and be your subject. All right, so we're going to take you out this morning with Banjo Dan Lindner, who wrote this song about the Orville Gibson case. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier, and I'll talk with you on Monday.
Who killed Orville Gibson? Ran the headlines round the state. Who had it in for that poor man that he met with such a fate? Who killed Orville Gibson? The case was never closed. After nearly 50 years, nobody knows. Let's take a journey back in time to 1957 and New Year's Eve, the last day of the year, to a picture postcard village of Newberry, Vermont, and a quiet winter morning, cold and clear. It's 4 a.m. and Orville Gibson grabs his milk and pail and heads out to the barn for morning chores. He's never seen alive again. The only thing they find is a milk pail lying crushed beside the door. And no one seems to have a clue. No one wants to talk. The silence in that town could make you shiver. Until the ice goes out and they find that missing man, all tied and soaking face down in the river. Who killed Orville Gibson? Ran the headlines round the state. Who had it in for that poor man that he met with such a fate? Who killed Orville Gibson? The case was never closed. After nearly 50 years, nobody knows. Some say Orville Gibson was the first to help his neighbor, while others claim to be his hired man. And maybe some were jealous of his handsome dairy farm on the valley's finest river bottom land. Oh, they ran some lie detectors, even put some men in jail, for they had to take some action, don't you know? But the evidence was flimsy and the testimony vague, and in the end they had to let him go. And rumors kept on flying while the truth stayed underground and left it all in the speculation. Was it vigilante justice? Was it envy or revenge? That's still the best kept secret in the nation. Who killed Orville Gibson? Ran headlines around the state.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Trouble for air travelers. The airspace over London is closed because of a computer failure, a power outage at a control center, a technical problem, they say. No indication of exactly why this happened, and officials at Heathrow Airport in London are not giving any idea of how long it may last. Now to the Atlanta area, where a gunman has shot and wounded two police officers. A search for the shooter.